Be seated. Reverend Vandeka, an African-American theologian, had recently moved to Massachusetts to teach at a local college. And several weeks after she arrived, she was invited to lunch with a member of the college staff. Her lunch partner, she describes as, quote, a fifth-generation Smith College graduate, with a New England genealogy older than the state and a portfolio perhaps as wealthy, unquote. Well, the woman's first question to the new faculty member was, what does it feel like to be black? Let me read Reverend Vandeka's account of what happened next, quote, I was not offended by her query. Her face was open, her eyes were friendly and engaged. She simply believed that nothing from her own background and experience could help her understand me. I knew better. I had been assigned a race by America's pervasive socialization process, and so had she. I thus believe that if she drew upon her own experience of being raced, she might then be able to see what we had in common. But how could I make her conscious of the racialization process to which her own European-American community had subjected her? Searching for an answer to this question, I invented the race game and invited her to play it for a week. The race game, as my luncheon partner quickly discovered, has only one rule. For the next 7 days, she must use the ascriptive term white whenever she mentioned the name of one of her Euro-American cohort. She must say, for example, my white husband, Phil, or my white friend, Julie, or my lovely white child, Jackie. I guaranteed her that if she did this for a week and then met me for lunch, I could answer her question using terms she would understand. We never had lunch together again. Apparently, my suggestion had made her uncomfortable, unquote. Reverend Vandeka goes on to describe how she repeated this experiment with dozens of other white folks over the years, but it was always met with the same profound discomfort and anxiety. One fellow was determined to play the race game for a week, but he found he couldn't do it for more than a few hours. He said he felt too much guilt and shame. But why? After all, we white folks are perfectly happy to refer to my black friend or my African-American colleague. Why is it so hard to refer to my white friend, or my white colleague, or my white husband? Could it be that being white for us is just the normal state of being in our society? And as a result, white people don't consider that being white is something that needs pointing out. And even to do so is awkward and uncomfortable because it seems to be pointing out a characteristic that should just be obvious, except, of course, to those other people. As Reverend Vandeka puts it, quote, white folks reserve racial descriptions for persons who are not white. Such descriptions say, in effect, that the person described is not one of us, not part of our white community, but rather an outsider. The race game breaks this coded way of framing reality. It says, in effect, that X is just like us, the normative community, white, unquote. Makes you think, doesn't it? Could you play the race game for a week? I'm not sure that I could. You know, there's no doubt that many of us white folks are often clueless when it comes to race. We'll vehemently reject the suggestion that we're racist, all the while being steeped in a culture of white privilege and white society so much that we don't even see it, any more than a fish sees the water in which it swims. You know, I'm sure that's true of me. In case you guys didn't notice, I'm an old white guy. I don't apologize for that. It wasn't a choice I made. But throughout my life, I certainly have benefited from white privilege, most of the time without even realizing it. I don't even think about it all that much, maybe because I don't have to. Race never prevented me from getting a job or a mortgage, expressing my opinion in public, getting an education, interacting with police, defending myself in court, hailing a cab, purchasing insurance or health care, calling 911 for an ambulance, searching for clean air to breathe, or a grocery store in my neighborhood, or even deciding which worship community to join. And I'll bet that's probably true for most of the Euro-Americans in this room. So why am I thinking about it now? Why am I preaching about it here this morning? Well, what prompted the sermon was that a couple of months ago, we as a church community began a process of discerning our future with the MCC denomination. And Reverend Karen asked me to join the discernment team and specifically to consider the following question. Is our MCC denomination truly living up to the core values it proclaims? Is it doing justice to the founding vision of MCC espoused by our founder, Reverend Troy Perry, specifically with respect to racial equality and racial justice? So by way of research over the next few weeks, I looked at what's going on in our denomination. I did a lot of reading, and I talked to quite a few folks, both lay and clergy, both African-American and Anglo-American. I was acutely aware that as a white male, there's just no way that I can fully understand or internalize the perspective of, say, an African-American person or a woman. All I could do is listen to their testimony and take seriously their concerns. And I hope that I was able to do that. And I prayed that I wouldn't misunderstand what's happening within our denomination or misrepresent what I thought I did understand. And finally, I wrote up my findings and gave them to Reverend Karen, and she told me that she found my observations thoughtful, moving, hopeful, and she asked me if I'd like to share them with you in the form of a sermon. So here we are. And by the way, I believe that there's some copies of my draft report are available in the foyer if you'd like to pick them up after. But the fact is, you won't find much there that's not in my sermon this morning. So let's get started. If we're going to ask whether MCC is living up to its core values with regard to racial justice, it helps to know what those are. Just as MCC Austin has a set of core values that we hope represents what we believe as a faith community, so does our denomination. The four core values of MCC, as affirmed by the MCC General Conference, are inclusion, community, spiritual transformation, and justice. Inclusion, community, spiritual transformation, and justice. Those are beautiful goals that I think we can all affirm. And the descriptions of those in the MCC Statement of Core Values are peppered with phrases like resisting exclusion, offering a safe and open community, providing a message of liberation from oppressive religious environments, resisting structures that oppress people, and standing with those who suffer under the weight of oppressive systems. But the question is, do current practices within our denomination belie this wonderful rhetoric, or are we constructing our own oppressive systems? There certainly are prominent voices within MCC who believe that we're not living up to our core values, especially with respect to affirming and pursuing racial justice. Let me tell you three facts relevant to this belief. Fact one. At the 2016 MCC General Conference, we held an election for our denomination's next moderator. For those of you who may not know, the moderator is our Pope, leading our fellowship both spiritually and practically. Neither of the two leading candidates received sufficient support to be elected. Both candidates, Reverend Elder Darlene Garner and Reverend Elder Diane Fisher, are persons of color. Darlene is African-American of Jamaican descent, and Diane is a member of the Canadian First Nations. Some believe that race and or misogyny were contributing factors in the failure to elect either as our moderator. I wasn't personally present at the conference and don't have any direct knowledge of anyone's motivations for not supporting one or both of these candidates, so I can't really say whether that's true. Fact two. A recent reorganization of our denomination eliminated the department and effectively the job of the only ever African-American member of the Board of Elders, Reverend Garner. This prompted a call by several MCC clergy for a review of the restructuring and an apology from the governing board for the way this was handled. It also prompted an, quote, open letter to Metropolitan Community Church's leadership in support of Reverend Elder Darlene Garner, unquote, signed by numerous prominent members of the GLBTQ religious community. Fact three. Since 1998, MCC's periodic People of African Descent, or PAD, conferences have been landmark MCC events rooted in the African-American cultural experience. The fact that PAD was not held in 2018 was regarded by some as indicating a lack of attention by the denominational leadership to matters of social justice. The decision to not hold the conference was made despite the fact that PAD conferences have traditionally been self-supporting. Now, many believe that these and other factors are evidence of systemic racism within MCC. This was very well expressed by an October 2017 letter from members of the 2017 PAD conference programming team. This letter asserts that, quote, we have deep grief that for many African-American MCC members, being black within MCC only multiplies and challenges, multiplies the challenges faced in being LGBTQ and Christian, unquote. And they ask, quote, are we as MCC moving further away from our founding principles of justice and love that called us into being, unquote? You'll recognize that this is the very same question that Reverend Karen asked me to address as part of the discernment process. First, I want to say that I have always been intensely proud to be associated with MCC, not least because of its public stance with regard to racial and social justice. And like many of you, I think my perspective has been shaped by my experience with a local MCC community, MCC Austin. I do believe that MCC Austin has been pretty consistent in attempting to combat and denounce societal racism. And my experience with our local faith community undoubtedly has colored my perspective with respect to this larger body of which we are a part. And so it was painful to discover that many of my African-American colleagues and others find a culture of systemic racism within MCC. So I'd like to tell you what I've come to believe over the course of the past few months as I've looked into this. First of all, I believe it's clear that MCC has indeed fallen short of full realization of the ideals of justice and love that we espouse. White privilege and white entitlement have infected our fellowship. The current leadership of MCC has made decisions and taken steps, such as the decision to fire Reverend Elder Garner and the decision not to hold the PAD conference, that reflect an appalling lack of sensitivity to the needs and desires of our members of color. This is profoundly disturbing, but not particularly surprising, insofar as MCC in the U.S. is situated within a larger culture in which systemic racism and white privilege are pervasive. Many among the MCC leadership are white middle-class Americans steeped in this culture of white middle-class America, and those influences are very difficult to overcome. Nevertheless, I find it difficult to believe that the leadership is consciously or intentionally racist. Social and racial justice is just so much a part of the DNA of MCC. However, it's not enough that we be non-racist. We must be actively anti-racist. And one aspect of being anti-racist means that individuals in positions of influence must consider every decision and every action carefully, with an eye to how they will affect constituencies of color, both inside and outside our denomination. And it's clear that our denominational leadership has not done that. The letter from the PAD conference programming team asked, "Are we as MCC moving further away from our founding principles of justice and love that called us into being?" Well, unquestionably, MCC is going through a very difficult and traumatic period. Unquestionably, decisions have been taken by leadership that have alienated and injured people of color within MCC. And unquestionably, there are individuals within MCC who are not fully committed to dismantling white supremacy and white privilege within MCC and our broader culture. However, I think it's also useful to remember that our founding principles of justice and love have always been a work in progress throughout the 50-year history of this bold experiment in church, that is MCC. MCC was founded explicitly as a denomination of gay and lesbian Christians, but where all are welcome. The founding narrative was one of inclusion, but we've fallen short again and again over the years. Reverend Troy's description of MCC's history in his book, Don't Be Afraid Anymore, makes it clear that the inclusion of women, especially in MCC leadership, was a hard-fought struggle. At one early MCC service, the Reverend Elder Freda Smith, the first woman ordained in MCC, was presiding at the table. A man ran up the aisle and punched her in the face, knocking her to the ground, apparently incensed that a woman should be leading the service. How far we've come since then. Today, ours is probably the only Christian denomination in which a majority of ordained ministers are female. And how impoverished we would be as a church if the voices of women were still being silenced. Nevertheless, extension of MCC's message and outreach to bisexual, transgender, intersex, and other sexual minorities, much less to heterosexual individuals, is an ongoing process. We still haven't gotten sexuality right. And that's the whole point of our denomination. So why are we surprised that race, one of the defining social justice issues of our time, still roils our fellowship? And we're certainly not the only denomination for which that's true. Many of the more liberal Protestant denominations are struggling with racial divisions. The Unitarian Universalist Association, for example, recently went through their own round of intense self-examination on matters of race. A white male minister was hired to head one of their 5 geographic regions, joining 4 other white male regional directors. Another applicant, a woman of color, expressed dismay about the perceived bias in the process. And this led to the resignations of the denomination's U.S. president, chief operating officer, director of congregational life, and head of the ministers association. But perhaps there's a reason that it's the most liberal denominations, those with the most concern for racial and social justice, that seem to be having these issues. Could it be that we're the ones trying hardest to get it right and the ones who feel the most deeply the anguish when we get it wrong? Now, I don't want to be misunderstood as ignoring, excusing, or condoning the failures of our denomination or our own failures in not confronting racism within our society, within our institutions. It's there. It's real. It's evil. It's sinful. But sometimes we liberals are so self-reflective and so busy bashing our own institutions that we lose sight of the bigger picture. We're so busy trying to remove the splinter from our own eye that we don't have time left to whittle away at the log in our society's eye. And there's a grave problem with racism in American society today. In Charlottesville in 2017, violent, gun-toting white nationalists literally fought in the street with anti-fascist groups and Black Lives Matter members. Clergy from all faiths were physically threatened by white supremacists wearing shields and carrying guns. A car mowed through peaceful marchers, killing one and wounding several. And all our president would say is that there were good people on all sides of this confrontation. Is MCC free of the stain of racism and white supremacy? Of course not. But are we trying? I hope we are. Despite the recent missteps, I find reasons for optimism. There remains within MCC many powerful and prophetic voices deeply committed to the vision of social and racial justice for all. I know because I've spoken to a number of them over the past few weeks. And the fact that widespread discussions are occurring with MCC around these issues of systemic racism tells me that this is still a burning issue on the hearts of our people. Yes, the current leadership of MCC has much to answer for. But the current leadership is not MCC. We are. In a few months, new denominational leadership will take the helm, including a new moderator and new members of the governing board. And I personally have pledged not to support any candidates for these important positions who don't acknowledge the failures of our current leadership and commit to total transparency and integrity, to re-energizing around our core values, and to rebuilding trust with local congregations and other constituencies within MCC. And that includes rebuilding trust among peoples of color within our denomination. Thank you. In today's reading from Galatians, we find St. Paul at his most eloquent and most inclusive. He writes, quote, "As many of you as were baptized into Christ have clothed yourself with Christ. There is no longer Jew or Greek. There is no longer slave or free. There is no longer male or female. For all of you are one in Christ Jesus," unquote. What glorious words. But let's not forget that in some of his later letters, or at least letters attributed to him, Paul seems to have moved away from these sentiments. In the letter to the Ephesians, he says, "Slaves, be obedient to your human masters with fear and trembling. And wives, submit to your husbands as to the Lord." In 1 Timothy, he says, "I do not allow a woman to teach a man or to hold authority over him in church. She should be silent." And of course, in Romans, he seems to condemn all same-gender intimacy. If even St. Paul wasn't true to his own founding principles of justice and love, maybe we shouldn't beat ourselves up too much over our own shortcomings. Let's not let the perfect be the enemy of the good. Because if we'll only associate with perfect human institutions, we won't find any. For as Paul also reminds us in Romans, all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. As a faith community committed to the core values of inclusion, community, spiritual transformation, and justice, we must always strive to do better, to be a prophetic witness of this gospel of radical inclusion. But as Reverend Thandeka, she of the race game, writes, quote, "Let's learn to replace moral judgment with loving compassion. All of us have made decisions and acted in ways that compromise our moral integrity. Let's use our collective power as religious movements to help each other heal our crippled ability to relate with the full integrity of our humanity," unquote. Recently, I had lunch with Reverend Dr. William Knight, the African-American senior pastor of MCC San Antonio. And I asked him, excuse me, whether he believed that we as a denomination could turn this ship around. His response, quoting Jesus in Matthew's gospel, was, "With God, all things are possible." Well said, William. But do we truly believe it? Amen.